Okay, let's move on to item 8, a review of report on liquidity sub-portfolio.
So this is our annual update on the liquidity sub-portfolio. We do each one of the sub-portfolios in a rotation over the course of the year, so we're starting with liquidity. I want to walk through a little bit about what role it plays within the Sisera portfolio construction process. A little bit about operations, management lineup. I'm going to spend a fair amount of time on market conditions for obvious reasons and the impact that's happening on the portfolio today and prospectively. And then we'll touch on performance. So trustees have seen this graphic for many years now. Liquidity is really just intended to pay out the benefit payments. We're matching the certainty that we have around our benefit payments, the certainty around generating cash flow. So there's low risk to the size of the benefit payments. We're matching that with a low risk asset, which really frees up our growth and diversifying to have less cash flow demands. It is the cornerstone of the FFP construct. Is intended to generate most of the returns through actual income, trading, and the natural maturation of bonds. So this is not a trading-heavy strategy by any stretch of the imagination. It is a drawdown structure, so we top it up at least once a year. Sometimes we top it up multiple times a year, depending on where we want to do rebalancing elsewhere in the portfolio. But at least once a year, we do top that up to its full amount, and then every month, the benefit payments out of that. So it is we have the sawtooth pattern to the balance of the portfolio. We talk about that with the board during an annual funding plan, which usually comes up in the June timeframe, so coming up pretty quickly. Take a look at the actual projections, take a look at the yields we're seeing in the fixed income market, and give you a rough size of how much money we're going to need to put in, and then actually rebalance it in conjunction with getting the employee prepayments in July, so it matches up those cash flow profiles. The board's input on this portfolio is really to set that size. And you recall last summer we had a good, robust discussion around, did you want to keep 3 years of benefit payments, did you want to move to 2 years? I know there was some really strong arguments on either side of that. Ultimately settled on keeping it at 3 years here. And then the one thing the board has not done to date is the board can choose to temporarily reduce the size of this program if you get a really big equity market dislocation. We have not had a really big equity market dislocation since the early days of COVID and before that, really since 2009. So this is intended to say, if we get, some of Marcel's slides on some of the scenario analysis, if you get the equity market selling off 25, 30% or more, we want to be an opportunistic buyer of that. We come to the board and ask to use 1 year's worth of benefit payments to go purchase dislocated equities. It's there as a relief valve. We've had relatively benign market environments, all things considered, since we put this in place, so we haven't had to use that. Characteristics that I touched on, this is going to be highly liquid, high credit quality, short duration. So this is U.S. short duration corporate and government bonds. It is pretty plain vanilla. This is something where this is right down Dan's alley in terms of we go out a little bit more on duration, but we do not take a whole lot of risk in this portfolio. The manager structure, we have a three manager structure, SIT Fixed Income, Dimensional Fund Advisors, and Insight. They each bring something a little bit different to the table. So SIT, it buys very seasoned government mortgages. So these are mortgages that are down to the tail end of them. A lot of people have prepaid their mortgages, whoever hasn't. It's probably unlikely to prepay their mortgages. They have low balances, not a lot of institutional demand. They go in and pick them up on the cheap and generate a higher yield that way. It should be arbitraged away. In 30 years of knowing these folks, I've always thought it was going to be arbitraged away. It persists because of behavioral biases, so we take advantage of that there. Dimensional Fund Advisors uses a quantitative model to model out bonds. So I think of them as the money ball approach to the bond market. They're kind of agnostic about which individual credits they bring into the portfolio, as long as in aggregate it gets the characteristics they like, so they can source liquidity in a little bit different ways than some of their peers. And then inside is really the completion portfolio. So we say, hey, we're going to draw X dollars from DFA, we're going to draw X dollars from SIT. Here's your bogey. Go out and build us a portfolio that primarily through we call it buy and maintain. So primarily you can buy a bond, you intend to hold it for the entire period, and then when that bond matures, that's meeting the cash flow needs 2 and 3 years out. So they all bring something a little different. These managers have been the lineup since day one. We have shifted around their target allocations over time as we've gotten to respond to different market environments, but these are the folks put in place in 2016-17, and so it's been a pretty durable portfolio. Market environment, here comes the fun part. So we take a look at market environment in fixed income land. This is really talking about rate environment and credit risk. And so rate environment is heavily influenced by inflation and the behavior of the Fed. So if you take a look at inflation, it does remain elevated relative to where the Fed says it wants to be. It's not super elevated in terms of long-term history, but it is still a little bit above where the Fed wants it to be. All things equal, that would mean the Fed would be unlikely or less likely to cut rates because they still want that inflation over time. We did see the economy contracted in the first quarter. Well, normally the Fed would cut net environment. So you have this tension kind of pulling on that macro environment. And then we have the known effects of tariffs would be inflationary. It is a tax. The second and third order effects about how the economy shifts to reshoring, nearshoring, anything of that nature, very difficult to predict. That just adds volatility. A little bit deeper on some of these. The Federal Reserve does have this dual mandate of keeping unemployment low and keeping inflation stable. So unemployment has come down from the COVID highs. It's still in that 4-ish% range. We've seen it tick a little bit higher, but this is still pretty stable. You can consider this low. That's the green line there. Take a look at inflation. We all talk about CPI. We talk with the actuaries about CPI. The Fed uses what they call PCE, which basically has a lower component of shelter in their numbers. So that's a little bit higher than where they'd like it to be. It's still sitting at 2.8. They stated they wanted it to, so there's the potential. Still relatively low by long-term standards, but directionally, the Fed would like that. Rate environment. Now, this is a busy slide, so I'm going to walk you through this. This is the Treasury curve. So this is the yield of various tenors of Treasuries as you move out from shorter duration on the left to longer duration on the right. And whenever that line goes down, starts high, goes down, it's called the inverted yield curve. Those are bad historically. Those are precursors of recessions. So what we have here is that brown khaki line where it's very inverted. That short end is high, drops way down, and then stays kind of flat. That's 2 years ago. So that is early 2023. Fed had raised rates, long term was staying down. That's a really bad situation from a market participant standpoint. They're basically saying, I'm going to pay up for short term debt because I don't think there's going to be stability. Fast forward to a year ago. Well, a year ago is that blue line up at the top. Still inverted, but you saw the entire line shift up. So, okay, interesting. Does that have a big impact? I think a year ago we were still kind of looking at that and saying, yeah, I mean, rates have shifted up and yields are up, but this inverted thing is still kind of a negative warning sign. Then you fast forward to March 31 of this year, we're at the red line. You see that is much less inverted, and that longer term is positive trend. So anything out past about 2 years, 3 years, is positive trend. You're getting closer to something we're much more comfortable deploying capital into. This is getting closer to a normal rate. And then the obvious question would be like, well, that was March 31. We had an economic shock, policy shock on April 2nd. What did that do? Did we see a material impact from the tariff announcements? We saw all that volatility in the stock market. What happened in the Treasury market? That's that green line there, where it's still inverted, but from 2 to 3 years out, it's still positively sloped. So you really saw a 2-3 year, there was demand there, but you know, we didn't see a blowout. So this is, I would say, a muted response from the bond market to a pretty big policy position. Now, the bond market tends to be the market that's an early warning signal. That tends to respond before the stock market. So this is a little bit interesting, where the bond market is basically saying, I'm not sure there's something here in the stock market, like, whoa, you know, all bets are off there for a couple of days. The other side, so that was on the Treasury side, that's the government side. And they said, we have governments and corporates, like, okay, well, we saw that sell off in the equity market. What do corporate bonds do? Do the spreads widen out tremendously? And the top chart's pretty busy, but just look at the bottom chart, this bar chart there. Blue line is a year ago, the red line is the end of March, the green line is the end of April. I mean, spreads increased, but again, not a lot. This isn't a blowout. This is just small incremental increases. And this is the single A market. So this is high credit quality risk. This is kind of in the sweet spot of the type of corporate credits that purchase within the liquidity portfolio. So a fairly muted response from the bond market to date. Let's turn to the macro environment. You know, so what this is doing with changing expectations, because the Fed is going to be forward-looking. They say they want to be data-driven, but they're always going to have an eye on the future as well. So we take a look at this forecast. Now, these forecasts are going to be, some of them are going to incorporate some of the tariff ideas. It's kind of the best thinking as of late April. I took a look at the columns, the 2025 estimate, the 2026 estimate, GDP expectations coming down. Not a surprise. If you have tariffs, if you have reduced trade, that would be a drag on GDP. Unemployment ticking up, so the Fed is trying to manage that unemployment number as well. But not a huge shift, 50 basis points ticking up. And you know, Fed funds rate coming down about 50 basis points in 2025 and 2026. So there is some expectation that the Fed is going to be in a rate cutting mode. That tension with the inflation numbers and the unemployment numbers, you end up with a pretty delicate situation. Of course, the Federal Reserve has become punching bag for a lot of the rest of the federal government as well, but their independence is respected. Market participants are saying, I think all things equal, they're going to be in slight. I will say it has been interesting to try to navigate through some of the goals of the tariffs. Certainly, in talking with a number of people at, during the former members of Treasury, they seem to be focused on a 10-year yield and wanting to that to come down in terms of lowering the overall debt service cost. So there does seem to be, at least initially, some focus from this administration that 10-year yield, they want that number to drift down. That's kind of hard to manage from the executive branch perspective. The recession likely force the Fed's hand to bring that down. But outside of that, I think getting the debt service cost down is kind of a standard goal of this administration. So again, I don't have great answers for you, but I want to highlight that there's this tension out there. We've talked about the rate environment being higher for longer. I think that's still the base case. I mean, market participants expecting slight rate cuts over 2 years, 100 basis points over 2 years is not huge, but it should be a base case is going to be higher for longer, but with a wider range of potential outcomes. And just to highlight, this is the Taylor rule. This kind of says there's a natural rate for the Fed funds to be. We're not far off. We had the big dislocation during COVID, and then the resulting inflationary environment. As it stands now, 2025 guideline, we're back in the envelope, it's like probably about 4.5% there, or collective lifting. We're right in line. So not a strong impetus point. So against that rate environment, what did our actual portfolio do? And I think this is something where we've talked about historically when rates were very low, there was an opportunity cost associated with the portfolio. It was fulfilling its role. It was kind of an expensive way of doing that. And I think we highlighted a year ago in the asset allocation that we're in a new rate environment, where the opportunity cost is diminished. And we see that in the 1 year numbers here. So the portfolio produced 6%. Good, solid total return. All of our managers are beating their longer term benchmarks. Good, robust results. Natural question, and I think Dr. McDonald has been asking me this question over the years, like, is that durable, or what happens, you know, kind of going forward? Well, with bonds, you kind of have a cheat sheet of future returns, and that you can look at the yields. And so if you look at the yields of maturity across our portfolios, you know, from the high fours to the high fives, so call it on a blended basis, mid fives. If the rate environment doesn't change, you expect a mid fives return. You put that against the backdrop of, I mean, we have a 6.75% discount rate. It's a fairly, you know, without a lot of volatility, it's a fairly good return. Gets us a long way towards that actuarial target, not a lot of downside, and with giving us certainty around where the benefit is coming from, so that we can deploy to private equity, private credit, and real estate investment. So, you know, I sit here today, I think we've navigated some difficult environments with this portfolio. It's always fulfilled its goals, but sometimes it's been, the market environment has been challenging when it comes to deploying capital at attractive returns. We're sitting at fairly attractive returns right now. So in conclusion, it is hitting its stated metrics. The yield environment is still set up for a good return. If we're getting a mid-fives yield, and if the rate environment stays stable or declines slightly, we're going to be in a 5-6% total return range for the next year or so here. And I think this is a everything is working fairly well story. So I'd be happy to take any questions, but this is a positive story for the organization.
Great, thank you very much, Tim. Any questions? Okay.
I answered everything about the macro environment and the Federal Reserve and the U.S. Treasury.
No, there's still a lot of questions about that. We'll just take those offline.
Got it.
Okay. Thank you so much.